The Zohar isn't merely a book. It's a doorway into the most profound mysteries of existence. For centuries, this cornerstone of Jewish mysticism has captivated spiritual seekers, scholars, and even celebrities like Madonna, Leonard Cohen, and Bob Dylan, who have all drawn inspiration from its enigmatic teachings. When first published in 16th century Italy, some feared its power might harm unprepared readers, comparing it to Rabbi Akiva's colleagues who ventured into mystical realms with disastrous results. Yet its publishers proceeded, believing the Zohar would stimulate messianic redemption. What makes the Zohar so compelling? It presents a radical vision of God as infinity, both female and male, and reveals hidden layers of meaning within sacred texts that transform our understanding of reality itself. Daniel C. Matt's monumental translation project, spanning over 20 years, has finally made this esoteric masterpiece accessible to English readers, unveiling one of world literature's greatest treasures. As we journey through its mystical landscape, prepare to encounter a vision of reality where the divine and human realms intertwine in ways that will forever transform your understanding of existence. Imagine reality as a vast palace with multiple chambers, each leading deeper toward the divine presence. This is the Zohar's vision of the Haikahot, heavenly halls or palaces that structure the cosmos and serve as the pathway for human prayer. When you pray with proper intention, your words don't simply dissipate into the air. They travel through these celestial halls, unifying them and facilitating the union of divinity's male and female aspects. The halls exist beneath Malkut, the lowest divine emanation, and mediate qualities of their associated Sephirot, the 10 divine attributes through which God manifests in creation. Rabbi Shimon, the Zohar's central sage, explains that righteous prayers navigate these halls, uniting them to prepare the seventh hall as Malkut/Shekinah's abode, the divine feminine presence. The halls function as Shekinah's maidens, arranged through prayer for union with the Sephirot and ultimately between divine masculine and feminine aspects. In the first hall stands the ministering prince Tohariel, who determines which souls may enter. Worthy souls are admitted. Unworthy ones are seized by princes of the other side and brought to hell for judgment. Similarly, prayers that pierce atmospheres and firmaments arrive at this hall's opening. Worthy prayers enter, while unworthy ones drift down to the lowest firmament where Prince Sahariel stores them until the person returns to righteous ways. As we ascend through the halls, we encounter increasingly profound mysteries. The fourth hall manifests divine dominion on earth and guards the ways of Torah. Here, all worldly cases are judged: merits, sins, punishments, and rewards. The fifth hall illuminates those below in the mystery of faith, issuing holy spirits animated by supernal kisses that provide vitality for human soul breaths. The sixth hall represents abstinence from sins and evil desires, contrasting with the sixth hall of the other side, which contains worldly pleasures that lead humans astray. The seventh hall, the innermost, most concealed, contains no actual image or body, only mystery within mystery. It functions as the work of combination, Masse Merkavah, where proper binding of kinds creates divine unity. This hall embodies the mystery of the supernal holy name comprising blessing, loving-kindness, power, and justice, the totality from which emerges the fathers and that which joins with them. What does this mean for us? The Zohar teaches that one who knows how to arrange prayers properly becomes concatenated within the divine system. Through proper prayer and confession, our sins transfer to the other side as its portion, creating a spiritual equilibrium. Perfect prayer requires thought, desire, heart, voice, and word of lips to accomplish perfection and unification corresponding to supernal patterns. When we achieve this, we become beloved above and below, and our prayers never return unfulfilled. The commandments aren't merely rules, they're cosmic technologies for uniting the upper and lower worlds. The Zohar reveals their dual nature as both remember, male, and observe, female, forming a single totality that maintains the harmony of existence. The first commandment is to know the Holy One both generally and particularly. Generally means recognizing there is a supreme power who is master of the universe. Particularly means knowing Him in intimate detail. This mirrors I am the first and I am the last, general and particular, forming one unity. When Moses first taught Israel about God in Egypt, he began with general knowledge. You shall know that I am Yehovah-Hir God. Only after 40 years did he teach particular knowledge. Know today and take to your heart that Yehovah is Elohim. The fourth commandment is to unify God's name daily, creating oneness both above and below. This unification requires directing one's heart, will, and all limbs toward becoming one, just as the supernal limbs are conjoined through this unification. When performed properly, all heavenly hosts arrange themselves in rows to participate, and an attendant called Heleniu, the gatherer of roses, collects the limbs of the body, while the supreme name gathers the supernal limbs through 42 names, creating a single unified body above and below. Consider the seventh commandment concerning tzitzit, ritual fringes. These aren't merely decorative, they help one remember all Torah commandments. You will see it and remember all of Yehovah's commandments and do them. The tzitzit serves as the king's sign, prompting remembrance and action. The blue thread symbolizes the throne of David and the seat of judgment, instilling awe. Like a father's strap that reminds a child to behave, seeing the blue thread reminds one to follow the straight path. The 18th commandment is to bless the Holy One for everything one eats, drinks, and enjoys. Without blessing, one robs God. These blessings draw life from the source to the holy name, pouring supernal oil to stream through all worlds. When one blesses God, they themselves receive the first share of those blessings. Blessings ascend through celestial realms, announced as gifts from the person to God. The most powerful blessing is one answered with Amen, which adorns it with supernal crowns. What about love? The sixth commandment is to love the Holy One with abundant love, following Abraham's example of surrendering body and soul. One who loves the Holy One sustains 10 utterances above and below, corresponding to Abraham's 10 trials. This love transcends all worldly rites and brings the greatest glorification to God's name. Through these commandments, we become active participants in the cosmic drama of divine unification. Each mitzvah performed with proper intention doesn't just fulfill an obligation, it repairs the fabric of reality itself, drawing down divine light and creating harmony between the upper and lower worlds. Have you ever wondered if your physical appearance might reveal something about your character or destiny? The Zohar's section on physiognomy, Raza Derazin, or Secret of Secrets, suggests exactly this, that our bodies are texts that can be read by those with the proper knowledge. Unlike systematic, ancient, and medieval approaches to physiognomy, the Zohar's treatment reads like clinical notes, brief observations about unusual features and corresponding characteristics. What distinguishes the Zoharic approach is its emphasis on the mutability of physical features resulting from virtuous or sinful behavior. Your face isn't fixed, it's constantly being rewritten by your moral choices. For example, a crooked nose sloping rightward indicates someone inscribed with the Hebrew letters He or Resh. Such a person speaks pompously and has distinctive physical features, a broad forehead line with four fine ones, moderately small reddish eyes, and somewhat smooth hanging hair. This person comes from a long chain and is trustworthy and successful, though physically flawed, being a eunuch of the sun with reproductive defects and a gnarled little finger on the left hand. The Zohar also examines those born under planetary influences. Those born under Saturn tend toward melancholy unless engaged in Torah study, which unites them with the Holy One. Those with ancestral merit may overcome Saturn's influence entirely, demonstrating that spiritual practice can transcend astrological determination. Beyond individual features, the Zohar explores the deeper significance of the human form itself. The text interprets primal Adam's statement from Psalms about being knitted in the depths of the earth as evidence that holy souls derive from the coupling of the king and matronita, divine masculine and feminine principles. It discusses the formation of male and female souls, the necessity of arousal from the feminine aspect, and how all human features are engraved in the Book of the Righteous through letter permutations. This understanding transforms how we see ourselves and others. Our bodies aren't merely physical vessels. They're divine hieroglyphs expressing cosmic truths. Each wrinkle, each feature, each physical characteristic reflects our spiritual journey and moral choices. By cultivating virtue, we literally transform our physical appearance to better reflect divine light, making the body itself a canvas for spiritual artistry. At the heart of the Zohar's cosmology lies a profound understanding of Hebrew letters as the fundamental building blocks of reality. The divine essence expressed in these letters is first incised in ethereal relief, simultaneously revealed and concealed. As each letter emerges, its corresponding chariot comes into existence to bear and transport it. Supernal entities multiply through telescoping one within another, producing a vast continuum of spiritual presences. The letter Vav serves as a holy, supernal chariot containing three colors, corresponding to fire, water, and air, forming the divine name El with attributes of great, strong, and holy. From these three colors on the right side, nine attributes emerge, three from each color. From water come compassionate and gracious. From fire come slow to anger and abounding in kindness. From air come kind one and forgiving, or good and upright. The middle axis receives both sides, joining them with bolts and doors. Its spirit wafts 12 fragrances and differentiates into three colors, fire, water, and air, forming a chariot called Awesome, Truth, and Keeping Kindness. Each color branches into two attributes, creating nine total, which, with the presiding holy name, completes 10. What's fascinating is how these divine names function as chariots, with the exalted names being like kernels and their epithets like shells. The 10 sacred names that may not be erased are like bodies for the heavenly soul, while the epithets are like outer husks that may be erased, though no letter of Torah should ever be erased. The Zohar further explains the relationship between the final He and the divine epithets, describing how during divine union, these epithets encircle and envelop like a husband spreading wings over his wife. The spring of the well, a covenant pillar sustaining all, enters the well in whispers, with waters never ceasing. This spring penetrates the point, the final He, imperceptibly, creating union when Aleph or Yod bonds with He. These mystical forms of Hebrew letters have specific cosmic functions. The He represents the crescent moon with a point in the center that absorbs divine light, while Vav represents the six integrated sides forming a single body in the image of Adam. The Aleph represents three facets, the patriarchs, united as one, the mystery of written Torah encompassing all, while Vav appears as a single extension representing the human form. By understanding these letter dynamics, we gain insight into the very structure of reality. When we engage with Hebrew letters, whether through prayer, study, or meditation, we're not merely dealing with symbols, but with the actual building blocks of creation. This explains why Jewish mystical practices often involve letter combinations and permutations. They're working directly with the code of the cosmos. At the heart of the Zohar's cosmology lies a mysterious instrument called Kav Hamida, the line of measure, the divine tool God uses to gauge mystical overflow to the 10 Sefirot. This instrument, also called Batzina de Cardinuta, lamp of adamantine darkness, is a luminary so potently brilliant it overwhelms comprehension. The imagery derives from biblical descriptions of measuring Jerusalem, which the Zohar projects onto hidden realms of divinity. The Kav Hamidah serves not only as God's measuring tool, but as a mystical instrument for Kabbalists to envision divinity and participate in the divine emanative process, the ultimate goal of meditation. This divine measure originates from the spark of adamantine darkness that emerges from primordial will, displaying colors white, red, green, black, and establishing cosmic proportions. The text details elaborate measurements of celestial worlds and clusters, with the first cluster containing 3,000 worlds. Those who comprehend this mystery inherit both this world and the world to come. From the first cluster, Kav Hamidah ramifies through 12 supernal clusters and 236 minuscule clusters, all existing as a unified emanation despite varying levels of manifestation. The Batzina measures the cosmic head in a circle of 60,123 spans, containing 600,000 worlds and 60 myriad others. The measurement extends inward to the body's depth, cinching 500,000 worlds within. Three nodes, above, middle, and below, are cinched in the Batzina, establishing the dimension of length and forming three clusters on each side. Each cluster contains 600,000 worlds with precise measurements of spans and handbreadths. The square stands upon circle, circle upon length, length upon depth, and depth upon height, all measured by the Batzina. The Batzina inscribes four colors in their proper places, white, red, green, and black. It measures 1,000 on each of the four sides, corresponding to the four letters of Yad He Vav. The white spark on the right measures 700,000 worlds and 613 spans, replicated across all dimensions. When black and white colors join, they form a single measure totaling 28,000 worlds with additional precise measurements. The 17 supernal clusters within the Batzina correspond to the mysteries of the three divine names, Yad-Heh-Vav, Eloheinu, Yad-Heh-Vav. What does this mean for us? The Zohar suggests that by contemplating these divine measurements, we can align ourselves with cosmic proportions and participate in the divine creative process. Just as God measured and formed the cosmos, we too can measure and form our inner worlds through meditation and mystical practice. Happy are those who understand these supreme secrets, for the Batzina ultimately unites all sides of faith, allowing one who knows its mysteries to cleave to divine wisdom. Ezekiel's vision of the divine chariot represents one of the most profound mystical experiences recorded in Scripture. The Zohar elaborates upon this vision, advancing the thesis that divinity and cosmos comprise a series of quaternities pervading all being, demonstrating mystical continuity between divine and material realms. Rabbi Elazar explains that this prophecy occurred when the Shekhinah descended into exile with Israel, with the supernal glory concealed and permission given to Babylon to reign for 70 years. The celestial beings in Ezekiel's vision have straight legs joined as one, following an upright path with the holy side while avoiding the other side. Their feet appear like a single calf's hoof, lacking toes that would manifest other forces. This design seals them off from the other side, though they still bear a single imprint providing a base for it. From these beings' legs, sparks and flames burst out toward both right and left sides, joining as one and creating troops and legions that serve as agents in the world. These agents become garbed in bodies below, executing assignments before returning to sanctify their master's name. The image of their face was a human face, a tracing from the hidden Hashmal where light sparkles and fire ignites. When these beings are configured for the throne, their appearance changes according to the direction they face. Eastward showing Adam's image, southward bearing the lion's visage, power and force, northward displaying the ox, hard judgment, and westward showing the eagle, cleaving to heaven. From their burden of travel, these beings exude sweat that forms the river of fire. This sweat drips as four kinds of fire, white, red, green, and black, that intermingle and create flames. From these flames arise the destroying angels who torture sinners in hell. The prophet sees these beings darting to and fro, sometimes revealed, sometimes concealed, bearing different names and colors as they move between realms. The divine name Yahweh Vah encompasses all lights, sometimes descending and returning in different hues as Elohim, El, Tsevaot, or Shaddai. True prophets gaze through these mysteries as if from behind a wall, perceiving the speculum that does not shine. The Zohar amplifies Ezekiel's uncertainty about his vision through frequent references to the looking-glass nature of prophecy, employing distancing rhetoric that underscores the document's broader attention to prophetic faculty. This suggests that even the most profound mystical experiences are mediated. We see through a glass darkly, as the Apostle Paul would later write. Yet this mediation doesn't diminish the experience, rather it acknowledges the necessary gap between infinite divinity and finite human perception. Among the Zohar's most fascinating teachings is its interpretation of Moses' staff, not as a mere walking stick, but as a cosmic instrument embodying divine power. The staff was created at twilight before the first Sabbath, alongside nine other supernatural phenomena, including the miraculous script incised into the Sinai tablets. The side of Moses' staff bearing engravings of divine compassion and judgment both saved the Israelites and drowned the Egyptians, creating 12 paths through the sea for Israel's escape. Just as the compassion and judgment side performed two miracles, the compound judgment side would perform two water extraction miracles, at Mount Horeb, striking the rock, and at Meribah, speaking to the boulder. In the Numbers episode, the miracle was to be performed through Moses speaking to the rock, meant to consummate the snake aspect of judgment and complete the different divine names associated with judgment. The snake's power lies in its verbal trickery and bite, so speech is the appropriate method for defeating it, hence God's command to speak to the rock. When Moses struck instead of speaking and the people complained aloud, the snake retained its power, resulting in God unleashing fiery serpents. Moses had completed only the rock aspect of God's name, not the snake aspect. Because Moses failed to complete the task of consummating God's name, he was prevented from completing Israel's redemption and bringing them into the Promised Land. The staff represents a profound paradox. How can the name El, which signifies chesed, compassion, greatness, manifest judgment from the serpent? The Zohar explores this through scriptural references showing El as a source of compassion. The name El also connotes strength and power, specifically the strength to subdue judgment's forces. Though El incorporates judgment by the snake, a creature with a crooked path, El remains just in his punishments. This underscores divine complexity. Compassion prevails over, yet remains compatible with justice. Moses possessed both a physical staff and the staff of Elohim, divine potency. When divine power materialized in Moses' staff, they functioned as one. The divine staff symbolizes Shekhinah, signified by the name Elohim, over whom Moses prevails when unified with Tiferet. The dwelling, tabernacle, represents Shekhinah. The staff resided there, except when Moses needed it during desert travels. This teaching reveals that even our most powerful spiritual tools contain both compassion and judgment, and how we use them determines which aspect manifests. Like Moses, we must learn to speak rather than strike, to use our spiritual power with wisdom rather than force. The Zohar weaves a fascinating narrative connecting Joseph's sale by his brothers to the commandment of the Sabbath and ultimately to Israel's exile and redemption. By selling Joseph, the brothers transgressed the Sabbath, which is associated with him. The homily develops a historiographical explanation of God's commandment of the Sabbath as rectification for the brothers' sin, with subsequent Sabbath violations causing the destruction of both temples. 22 years passed between Joseph's dream and its fulfillment. The brothers were punished tenfold for exiling Joseph, resulting in 210 years of Egyptian exile, the numerical value of go down. The death of each guilty brother served as partial atonement, reducing the punishment. In the cosmic structure, Yesod links upper and lower Sephirot in the celestial realm, with Joseph as the human correlate below. The brothers could obtain food only from the very person they had sold, whose sale had aroused the demonic other side, causing the famine. As the seventh Sephirah, Yosef provides redemption during the 7 years of famine. Just as Yesod provides divine overflow for Shekhinah above, Joseph is the provider of food below. The eyes of Kol, Joseph, look to God for nourishment, and Joseph then becomes the provider, distributing this sustenance to others. When people observe God's law, King David's earthly kingdom is strengthened, which in turn fortifies Shekhinah, divine presence, also called Malkut, above. The Sabbath represents a profound cosmic harmony. The word Shabbat is an etorikon, an anagram. The letter Sheen plus Bat, daughter. The three prongs of Sheen represent the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, symbolizing Hesed, Gevurah, and Tiferet. Since daughter signifies Shekhinah, Sabbath represents not just a day, but a confluence of mystical qualities within Shekhinah. Adam's sin caused a rupture between Shekhinah and Tiferet within the Sephirot. Abraham repaired this by planting a tree, symbolizing Tiferet, in Beersheba, symbolizing Shekhinah, reuniting the divine couple. Shekhinah is called Beersheba, well of seven, perhaps because she receives emanation from seven Sephirot, or because she is both a well and the seventh of the lower Sephirot. Divine judgment questions Israel's early release from Egypt, arguing the punishment should have been 7 times longer. God responds that when Jews observe the Sabbath, they facilitate union between Yesod and Shekhinah, represented by Joseph and Shabbat, thus atoning for their transgressions and justifying the reduced sentence. This teaches that spiritual practice can literally alter cosmic destiny. Our observance of sacred time creates ripples throughout all realms of existence. The Zohar's vision of redemption centers on the reunion of the divine masculine and feminine principles, separated through cosmic and historical trauma. The star mentioned in Numbers actually designates Shekhinah, extracted from Tiferet, symbolized by Jacob. This separation of masculine and feminine divine potencies enables the Messiah, who will be revealed, to redeem the Jewish people. The Messiah signifies Yesod, called Covenant, manifesting the fulfillment of Tiferet, represented as the Tree of Life. When the Messiah arrives, Gentile oppression of Jews will end. Their malevolence represents wicked elements clinging to Shekhinah, the lower tree, before her reunion with Tiferet. Shekhinah is symbolized by Zot, this, juxtaposed with time to indicate the Messianic era as the moment of her complete adornment and elimination of the other side's influence. Jewish tradition speaks of two messiahs, the suffering Messiah son of Joseph, or Ephraim, who dies in battle, and the triumphant Messiah son of David. The Zohar uniquely identifies the first Messiah as descending from Abijah, the only righteous child of wicked King Jeroboam, who died young but fathered the child destined to become Messiah, son of Ephraim. The apocalypse culminates in Shekhinah, the Doe, reuniting with the Blessed Holy One, though Israel continues suffering until their prayers are answered. Then equilibrium returns. The temple, Shekhinah's house, is rebuilt. She returns to her earthly home. The patriarchs, symbolizing Hesed, Gevurah, and Tiferet, resume their proper positions, and the Messiah returns to his cave. On Redemption Day, paralleling Shavuot, three interrelated elements manifest. The 3 days before Torah giving, three iterations of Kol, shofar blast, three proclamations from Isaiah's herald, Shekhinah, and the Sephirotic triad. Shekhinah, as the traveling shofar, receives power from supernal Teruah, Tiferet, to arouse Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob/Moses to convey divine overflow below. The 70-year Babylonian exile corresponded to the 70 sabbatical years Israel neglected. The sabbatical and jubilee years symbolize Shekhinah and Bina respectively, and their transgression tarnished these divine sephirot. After 420 virtuous years, baseless hatred resurfaced, leading to the Second Temple's destruction. This hatred, reaching back to the brothers' hatred of Joseph, brought divine punishment through people, Rome, Christians, who harbored similar enmity. The Zohar calculates that since Joseph was separated from his father for 22 years, this number is multiplied by 10, representing the brothers, and then by 7, corresponding to the 7 lower sephirot, yielding 1,540 years of exile. After subtracting the 280 years already spent in Egyptian and Babylonian exile, 1,260 years remain until the ultimate redemption, a timeline that would have pointed to the late medieval period when the Zohar was composed. This messianic vision reminds us that redemption isn't merely personal, but cosmic, the healing of primordial fractures in the very fabric of reality. Our spiritual practices contribute to this healing, preparing the way for universal restoration and harmony.